Jeez.
What?
It's recording.
Oh, now I'm recording.
Cool.
Back up, belt and suspenders.
Yes. So, Jersey.
So, Rob. You went on a trip.
Yeah, I did. I went on a trip. It was a magical mystery tour. So I went to the UI18 conference in Baston.
Kids in the ad.
Yeah, I met no one. Actually, I did meet a couple people that had a very strong Boston accent, but ironically, only on the plane ride back to Minneapolis. Yes.
So, were they extremely aggressive people, like in Good Will Hunting?
They did not make me want to, debate obscure history references and whatnot in neither a mild nor aggressive way. They were actually very nice people.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
The stereotype does not hold up.
Nope. Darn those stereotypes. Let me down again.
So you went to this conference and you took a lot of really cool notes, but I want to hear about what your reflections are from this conference. Oh, I guess we should explain what the conference is.
Okay. So UI18 is it's put on, it's an event by the user interface engineering community who is a company that, I don't know the hierarchy of the company, but one of the star front people of that is Jared M. Spool, who is a very experienced sort of, one of the top people in the industry, user interface engineer and designers and user experience researchers and all that, right? And he's the one who delivers the keynote. And then there's a whole lot of other people that are part of that community, which reminds me a little bit of like a different version of Lean Into Art in a way, where they provide online workshops and they do in-person workshops and they sell memberships to explore all their content and all that. So interesting similarities, but it's all surrounding the topic of various concerns around design and user interfaces and data visualization and doing research and collaborating in groups for design concerns, being efficient with meetings, even stuff like that.
Wow.
So yeah. And then it attracts people of a variety of disciplines that are around the user-centric design concerns, especially. So you get people who are into just building web apps or OS, iOS apps or whatever, and people that design or people that run design teams. I had a lot of workshop experiences with managers of teams and people who worked in teams with UX designers, but we're trying to just understand that role a lot more. So some project managers and whatnot as well. And so, yeah, this is a place where people of a variety of skill levels and backgrounds were all just into studying just, UI design concerns.
That sounds amazing.
It was pretty darn cool because I felt super confident in going there because of the, I'd listened to their podcast for years, which isn't that interesting. Those podcasts keep, they just lead you down paths, huh?
Breadcrumb trails. What's the podcast name?
It is called, what's it called now? I mean, it was called Brain Sparks. It was called, let's see. UIE podcast. But if you just look for UIE podcast, you're going to find it. Okay. And I guess it is still called UIE Brain Sparks.
I think I was subscribed to this at one point or another based on your recommendation.
But it also has been called the Spoolcast in the past and whatnot as
well. Yeah.
And
writing that down. So anyway, so you got led there by a podcast. Get there. You get to this wonderful Emerald City.
Yeah. And so, right, I mean, day one, and so it's a three-day conference. Day one is an all-day workshop that you choose of among a few available. Day three is an all-day workshop that you choose among a different set of those available that day. And then day two is actually sort of a actually, it was two tracks of presentations that it was essentially a sampling of all the different speakers that were, you know, presenting workshops, and a few others who didn't have workshops on the you know, first and last days. So you get a sampling of people who had presented there before and, you know, probably would again. Some that were currently presenting where you're like, ah, oh, shoot, I had to pick only one workshop, you know, Monday and Wednesday, but Tuesday I got to see these other people that I didn't, you know, didn't get a chance to normally.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And let's see. So yeah, anyway, so the first, trying to think of what I saw now, day one. And of course I do not have my notes with me right now. Which is
well, I want the big picture takeaway.
Big picture takeaway. Gotcha.
Like what? Why? Well, I just want to get your gut reaction. Like, how do you feel about this event? What are you most excited about after coming back?
It's gonna be funny. Okay, so one, I have a point where one aspect of it is validation, and I feel ashamed admitting it in a way.
Why?
I don't know. Will you please like me?
Oh, man. I hate that we feel that way. I hate that, first of all, that we personally feel that way. And secondly, I'm doubly angry that our culture tends to point that out as a virtue. You're being humble. Now, it's okay to want to be acknowledged for what you did. It's a human feeling, right?
Well, yeah. And let's see. So...
Anyway, so validation.
Validation, because there's the keynote was amazing, and one of the key hypotheses on the keynote, I mean, it was, I don't even want to jump to it because, again, I feel petty because of it, right? But it's the because there were so many other important resonating concepts presented during this darn keynote. But the one that stuck in my craw that I felt was really validating was essentially Jared Spool was creating this big map of like almost like an untenable set of assumptions that a UX designer is supposed to embody. So you're supposed to, you know, somehow understand, let's see, how to facilitate and how to research and how to, you know, collaborate and how to communicate and how to design wireframes and how to plan for metrics and how to, you know, like he had this growing word cloud around the discipline of experience designer.
Mm-hmm.
And then after his reveal, after establishing this word cloud, because he also added, you know, technology, like you should, you know, you know how to code, you know how to prototype, you know how to all these things, right?
Yeah.
And then he said, what I'm describing is a unicorn. And then he said, like, I know... And then instead of, like, here's what I expected him to do, having that bias. Because part of me is like, I've done that. And I'm not trying to just brag. I have this weird obsession of researching all these things and living a day job and a night job. And I've done it for like 20 freaking years. And so I've done a lot of different things, which I feel very fortunate for. But rarely do I face the word cloud. And I'm like, I do all that. Yeah. And... there's, you know, I've got some focus areas in this word cloud, whatever, but like, whatever.
So the assumption that I'm going to already come to based on what you're describing with Jared is that he's about to say, you can't be all those things. Forgive yourself for not being able to be all those things.
No, right? He doubled down and he said, I've started the Unicorn Society. He freaking doubled down and I was like, no way. I practically, I just almost yelled no way. In the, yeah. And
it's awesome.
I was stunned. So I seriously, now I'm, shoot, what is that? What was it called? I'm embarrassed. Unicorn, that I'm getting it wrong. UIE. Let's see. Shoot. Unicorn Institute. Thank you. All right. That's to myself. Thanks, myself.
Oh, so he dubbed this conference Unicorn Institute?
Yeah. So if you go to unicorninstitute.com, this is like an even more specialization. This is like this area of user experience that he is looking to hone in on. That sort of cross-disciplined.
What a great name.
I know. And I'm like, what's funny is like I've had someone in the not too distant past call me a unicorn in a professional context. And I'm like, that you're silly. Stop being silly. I don't know what you're talking about, but it's silly. Let's move on. Right. And this is what they were talking about. And I didn't realize it until I was in the audience with the guy who started it. And he's like, yeah, you know, this is a thing. Okay. There. All right. I don't know.
I think that's fantastic. I think it's great that he sets it up to sort of starts at that premise to turn away the faint of heart, right? But not in the way that like a drill instructor would, where it's like, you maggots, half of you are going to... I think about years ago, I remember hearing a story from a friend about they went into some art department in college. So this would have been one of my 20s. And it was for a highly competitive field of art and design, and the instructor said, you know, standing in front of the room with his arms behind his back, and he said, half of you will fail this course. Only the best get into this field. Only the chosen, only the elite get into this field, right?
And yeah.
And we've come up against this attitude in the past. We know what their agenda is there. They're trying to prepare us for how tough this thing is going to be. And I love that Jared starts with that, and I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for like either A, he's going to say like half of you guys can never do this, so give up, or forgive yourself for being frail mortals after all. But instead he says, yeah, this is an impossible thing, but isn't it exciting? Isn't it exciting that we can do that? Mm. Hooray for us that we can do this thing. Humans are pretty cool after all. What an optimistic way to say this is hard.
Yeah, it was wild to witness, and it's I think the negative outlook is a partially honest way to look at it, and I think this is also a partially honest way to look at it, because I mean, do you only look at the positive aspects? One of the positive aspects that he highlighted is that when you explore all of these different skills and roles, then you have a lot of empathy for people in all of these different skills and roles, which actually helps you, gives you sort of a broad palette of experience to draw upon to help with designing experience. You know, it's not really, and this is my paraphrasing of it, but I'm just going to pick out a paragraph from the unicorninstitute.com where Jared Spool is talking about the topic, what kind of designers should the Unicorn Institute produce? And he just mentions sort of some of his background. He says, I've been running UIE, which started with studying the designers of software products. Everything from email clients to word processors to molecular modeling tools and the software embedded in the International Space Station. Eventually, we moved to websites, and now we are spending a lot of time with mobile applications. So, I mean, even that, like, what a broad set of... And a lot of times we dismiss that. Like we're trying to fit into the factory somewhere. Like, no, it's okay, folks. I can help you here. I'll put on this one hat, and we'll only talk about this one hat.
Rob, are you a designer or a cartoonist? Pick one, because you can't be both.
Exactly.
If you're both, then both of them suffer.
It makes people uncomfortable, and it's all these models of ways of looking at it that I think are fair. It's like, okay, I'm not telling you to don't think of it that way. Mm-hmm. I see a different approach in that there's the things that I'm naturally inclined and interested to do, and then those that I stretch myself to do to experience that stretch and then maybe discover new capabilities that I want to continue to explore or try. And then there's, that's separate. That's like my internal model of it. But then there's the external model. It's like, how am I connecting those things with the world? And how does the world recognize that connection and me in providing that? Or not, right? And these are all just separate perspectives. So I have worked a lot of roles. And in fact, I mean, the last few years of my, a lot of where I've consulted and provided service, I didn't really, for the most part, I did not share that I was a coder, right? And that I know how to do other things. I'd only talked about the role in the factory that I was there to provide. For the most part, me being me, I sort of prod and explore and question, and then eventually have interesting conversation with people of different backgrounds, and then discovering if I can be of service there as well. But some places that's not cool. So I'd feel that out and say, okay, cool. Wouldn't worry about it. But you know, there's that whole mutual connection thing. Looking for, is this, you know, can I be of service with this? Whatever. Anyway, so the Unicorn Institute, it's just like a total different way to turn that on its head. And it's a different fundamental assumption, instead of like, oh yeah, that's just too many things and that's untenable and all that stuff, to like, that's a desired result and we're going to celebrate it. I have not experienced that very often.
I love it. That I am totally going to steal some of that from my classroom discussions.
Cool.
When I describe to my students, because I'll talk about things like psychology, and I'll talk about geometry, and I'll talk about, you know, history in the classroom to like make a point about visual communication. And the kids always turn it into, oh, math, you're talking about geometry? Blah. You know, because like, oh, we hate doing that because we're artists, you know. And then to which I've historically said, like, no, it's really cool. You have to know all this stuff. You have to if you want to be good at it. And then that just bums them out. But if I can somehow restructure the conversation to say, isn't it cool how artists are like masters of everything? No topic is too dangerous for an artist, right?
Yeah. Because, I mean, you're free to investigate and create and explore and start with knowing little to nothing and expand upon that. If you're
totally hanging on to that. No topic is too, or no subject is too dangerous for an artist. I'm writing that one down. Not often I get to write down my own ones. I usually write down just yours.
Whatever. false modesty stuff comes in again. Modesty. Anyway, I'm not trying to, whatever. Yeah, right. Oh, well.
If it was false modesty, I wouldn't have said I'm writing that down because I liked it so much.
I suppose. All right. It was a really, really... that was one giant takeaway from that event.
That's a big one. That's just on day one.
That was day two, actually. Oh, okay. That was midway through day two. And sort of like near that was like a big reveal during his keynote presentation. Which sort of, you know what? I'm just going to share one little snippet from. It's too damn sad, but I'm just going to say it anyway. So the realm of experience design, and you can think of like, oh, does it matter? So things function, right? You know, technically the web page is, you know, it kind of sucks, but if you ignore this or that and you force your way through this giant form, you filled out your taxes, right? Or whatever task you're trying to accomplish. And in the mentioning of the tax thing, actually Jared specifically, what was it? There's a new app and I don't remember the name of it. Tax form, iPhone. It basically, you can essentially write out a single page form, take a picture of it with your iPhone, and then that'll submit your taxes. If you can do the 1040 easy form.
Is it TurboTax SnapTax iPhone app?
I think that's it.
Yeah.
There you go.
SnapTax.
And there you go. So that's kind of amazing. So you can think about, well, is experience design worth a thing? Yeah. Because we have a lot of things that don't really take people's needs enough in mind, And by doing that, even to a small extent, all of a sudden we create a much better, we create less pain in the world, right? Or delight, right? Replace the pain with delight. This is not a bad thing, because sometimes we have stuff that like is really scary or hard to face. For instance, small kids with cancer. This was a hard one to keep drawing during and not get choked up and whatnot. And I will do a terrible job with the story, so no worries about getting choked up here.
Okay.
That in summary, there was an experience design team that addressed the need for one of the large, I think it's like an MRI machine, like for scanning young children, cancer patients. When one of the designers of that machine saw how a patient was and the patient's parents were facing the event of going into that machine, there's bad news all over the place. Their child has cancer. They're trying to get more diagnostic detail and all that. And this kid is about to get taken away from the parents and put into this tiny tube in this giant, just completely alien and scary looking thing.
Totally. Right?
I mean, it looks like a house size alien spaceship with a mysterious hole with lights in it that you get slid inside. And it's very tiny. It's like smaller than a coffin kind of thing, right? Somewhere in there. Anyway, so the designer was like, this, you know, we just went through so many advances in this, you know, this machine, and yet the experience is so terrible. Like, they ended up bringing together a team of experienced designers, and they tried to change the whole context of the event. And what they came up with is essentially it's a pirate adventure experience. So the bed in which the child needs to lie on to go into the thing, it looks kind of like a boat or a plank kind of thing, and the whole thing is like a big pirate ship, and the people there that are attending the machine are all, everyone in the whole in that whole corridor, that section of the hospital, is dressed as a pirate, or they belong on the island, right?
Oh my God.
And the parents get dressed up as pirates, and the kid gets dressed up as a pirate, and it changes the whole context of this experience. And then they help shepherd the child through this experience, and they get on the plank, and they're like, one of the key aspects of this whole procedure was the child has to lie absolutely still. Otherwise it fails with the diagnostics. It doesn't succeed. So they had like somewhere around, I'm sorry, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but roughly about 90% or so patients had to be sedated to successfully get through this experience.
Wow.
After all this. And so they take the kids, and they were like, okay, you're getting on the thing, and you know, we're off to this island. And but guess what? There's these amazing, like, I forget what they call it. It was like the dolphin mermaid spirits. And if you stay perfectly still, you'll get to see them.
Oh my God.
And so you lay in this bed, and you go in there, and then like there, you could, it smells of like the sea salt and all that is all in the air and whatnot. And the kid goes,
instead of saying, don't move or you'll have to do it again, you say, don't move and a wonderful thing will happen.
Yeah. And the numbers are completely opposite now. Like I have had to sedate like either like none or almost 0%,
a negligible amount.
Yes, and they all because they changed the experience of that event.
A friend of mine, who I won't name because he didn't give me permission to tell this story, but he has children. Taking his little daughter on a roller coaster, she's all excited about the roller coaster when she's on the ground. But now they're climbing that hill. And she turns to him and says, Daddy, I don't want to go on this anymore. It's too late. You're on the roller coaster. So what do you say? Do you say, suck it up? This is life. You committed something. Now you got to see it through, whether you're scared or not. Or do you say what my friend had the presence of mind to say? He said, you know, a lot of people, you heard him earlier when we were waiting in line, a lot of people scream when they're on this. And they do it on purpose because it helps make it more fun. So when we go over that top, we're going to scream as loud as we can. Mm-hmm. And it's in essence, giving her ownership of the scream, right? And helped her cope with the whole thing. And then she had fun on the thing. She was scared, but he told her that, no, no, this frightening experience, we can take control of that fear and we can let it out in this primal scream, right? Mm. Changed the whole context of the moment for the kid. And I was like, that's the kind of dad I'd want to be.
That's awesome.
But yeah. Anyway, I think we're done. And I just ruined it by saying that. Cut this part out.
End transmission.
We can't always end neatly.